Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, we'll hear from David Hughes and John Agosta from HSRI. Tell me a little bit about HSRI.
Well, HSRI is a nonprofit organization. We're based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I am based, and we also have an office just outside of Portland, Oregon, where John is based. HSRI has been around for 40 years now, and for its 40 years, we've worked extensively with federal, state, local agencies within the U.S., and more recently with some provinces in Canada. Our areas of focus include intellectual and developmental disabilities, behavioral health, child and family services, aging, and other disabilities, and more recently we've also added population health data work as well. And for all of these areas, we work to assist in the development of policies, the analysis of policy alternatives, and the implementation of policy directives at the federal, state, local, and program levels. We work to analyze and report on the quality of the services and systems. HSRI develops and maintains national data collection protocol databases regarding quality of life outcomes, like the national core indicators that 47 states in the U.S. participate in. We have techniques for resource allocation planning and implementation of resource strategies. We do evaluation of programs at the system and program levels. We do all of that with the involvement of stakeholder groups. And some of the principles that guide our work is the respect for diverse stakeholder groups and the involvement in service users in all of our activities. We have an empirical and evidence-based orientation, but the qualitative aspect of the importance of everyone's voice is important, and cultural competency is another sort of important aspect that the work, the people that are involved in the work reflect the systems and communities we're working in.
So,
John, did you want to add anything to that?
No, that was fairly complete. Thank you. That was good.
So, what are some of the challenges associated with this work?
Well, from my perspective, and I work mostly around people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, the challenges are twofold right now, at least. One is that from a systems point of view and trying to advise policymakers, we see that the demand for services is increasing for demographic reasons and a number of demographic reasons. We're also facing potential of workforce shortages coming along. And, of course, there is always a concern about budget. There's never enough money to do what we need to do. And so from a policy perspective, there is a great call to maybe think of new ways of delivering supports to people that are more cost efficient and still get the job done. And then from the personal side, what people are looking to have happen in their lives has to do with wanting to have a life in a community just like any other citizen. And for people with disabilities, that's oftentimes a very challenging thing. It's hard to get work. It's hard to fit in sometimes in communities. But everybody is really interested in having a life much like any other citizen. And so the challenge then is to balance together the need for discipline, greater and more efficient use of the dollars we have, but also to restructure systems to be more in tune with what kinds of supports people really need to live in the community.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with HSRI, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Dave, you want to go first?
Sure. I think the idea that I work primarily in the behavioral health work at HSRI, and I've seen a shift away from an acknowledgement that services in the behavioral health world don't fit neatly into the medical model that the funding streams do. So we've advocated pretty hard to increase the flexibility of funding to create more service opportunities to really get at the universal outcomes. And the universal outcomes, from my perspective, are that everybody that's being served in these systems and outside the system, because it includes me, they want independent and stable housing. They want meaningful employment and activities during the day. And they want social connectedness. And to the extent that you don't have those three pieces, the medical model of medication, crisis services when you need them, and therapy periodically doesn't quite cut it. Several years ago, the U.S. federal agency called the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration came out with a document called What Does a Good and Modern Behavioral Health System Look Like? And it included a very long continuum of services that need to be in place in order to accomplish that. And when you looked at the funding streams available, the federal Medicaid for folks that qualify, there was only a handful of those services that were available to people in the states to be able to access. And so what we've worked with the federal government on is expanding those options so that states can, through special waivers and applications, fill out that continuum of services. So we've worked with about 15 states to expand the services that are available so that there's a better chance for those universal outcomes to improve over time, housing, employment, and social activities.
So what are the next steps going forward?
John, why don't you talk about your next steps?
Well, I want to go back to the previous question, Cameron. It was about what kinds of successes that we really, So Dave really laid out a number of successes that we might think of at a systems level where we work with states to reshape systems and so forth. But I'll point in another direction and say that probably some of the most greatest achievements that I have felt has to do with helping people with disabilities find their voice. Mm-hmm. And not just in their personal lives, but also a voice in helping to shape policy. We have worked with what we call self-advocates, people who advocate for themselves in a number of jurisdictions, in Canada too. We recently completed a newsletter called The Riot, which is a newsletter we put together, and we did a special Canadian issue, we call the Maple Leaf Edition, where self-advocates across the nation put together what some of their expectations are about the systems changes that have to take place in Canada. So for me, it's not, I mean, obviously it's a great amount of enjoyment and personal achievement that comes, feelings of personal achievement that come with helping to shape policy, but really some of the greatest achievements I think we have at HSRI have to do with giving voice to the people themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point, John, and I just want to add on to that from the behavioral health perspective. Judy Chamberlain, who wrote an advocate, wrote a book called On Our Own, and she was on the HSRI board for many, many years until she unfortunately passed away. But she had a saying, nothing about us without us, that really helped shape the organization and our approach to the work we do. And it's so ingrained in everything we do from staff to project teams, to making sure that every state, county we go into, that those folks are at the table and have a voice. So that's a very good point, John.
In fact, Cameron, the newsletter we did was with Canada, People First of Canada, and it was entitled "We Belong, C to C to C," and it has to do with the Canadian promise to its citizenry, the notion of all Canadian citizens belong, right? And so the question was raised, does that really mean that people with disabilities belong? I mean, it's a reasonable question to ask. And so with self-advocates, we set out a series of questions to pose about whether or not Canadians with developmental disabilities belong around housing, employment, having relationships, any number of things. And so if you'd like, we can send you a copy of that, a link to it, so you can see what we're talking about.
I'd appreciate that very much. I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from George Callis, a disabilities advocate with some big dreams. Cam Wells here with
George Callis.
We're going to be talking about his work to further Creative Minds. So what can you tell me about Creative Minds?
It's a new business, privately owned. We're going to be taking adults from 18 to 60 years old for a day program, working with disability people, special needs, working on life skills, puzzles, pretty much everything from, activities to watching TV to playing video games.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your background and what makes you want to do this?
My background, I'm an educational assistant. I did respite work. I coach for ICHA, and I coach for the Special Stars.
So, do you think there is a need in the community for more programs for people with disabilities?
Absolutely. There's a big population.
And can you tell me a little bit about your coaching work here at the ICHA?
I've been doing it for 4 years now, and it's a great place to come, help kids out from 10 years old to all the way to 6 years old, 2 hours once a week. And it's great to see kids, accelerate in soccer.
So have you seen any challenges in your time doing this work?
Absolutely. There's a lot of behavioral problems, and there's a lot of things we don't know about. Like with autism, they can have seizures and we don't even know about it.
So how do you go about responding to a case like that when it comes up?
First talk to the parents and then see a doctor. That's the number one thing. First, you gotta do CPR, make sure everything's good, get the parents' number, and then go from there.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time working with people with disabilities, what's been the greatest success moment that you've experienced?
Seeing their attitudes every day change. Just a little progress, that makes me happy. As in, I was coaching one time and this kid never kicked the ball. He would kick the ball and never run with it. It took me about a month and he finally started running with the ball. The baby steps lead to, bigger impacts.
So, Creative Minds aside, what are your hopes and dreams for the disabled community?
My dream is to open a small business and expand. Help kids, once they're done high school, to change over into a program where they're accepted, and then bring them to communities, do field trips.
So what are the next immediate steps in this work?
My next step is to open up January 8th, and then go from there, and then expand to another location.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for acceptance and inclusion, what would you say?
Come check me out January 8th, and give me your ideas. When I talk to parents, I want their ideas with the kids. I want the parents to work with me and the kids to work with me.
So the program you're hoping to create is going to be geared to the actual needs, not just the models of what we as a society think these people should have.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So, is there any additional information you'd like to add?
Our location is 2180 Howard, and we're going to do open house around December, and then we'll open up January 8th.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Holiday bells are ringing, and Doing the Louvre is back for its 35th anniversary. Artists may submit in a number of different mediums, including paintings, drawings, original prints, photographs, small-scale 3D works, artist-made gifts, and more. ArtSite is accepting submissions between November 22nd and November 26th. All entries must be priced at $99 or less. Windsor, Essex County, Detroit, and Michigan area artists can find more information about submitting artwork via the ArtSite website at www.artsite.ca. Proceeds for this gala benefit the participating artists and help support ArtSite's programming and operations.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from David Hughes and John Agosta from HSRI. We also heard from George Callis from Creative Minds. In this segment of our show, we'll get an update from our friend, Katie Atkinson, from About Face, along with her friend, Vanessa. So, Katie, the last time you were here, you were telling me about some of the struggles you've had in terms of a facial difference.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you kind of reiterate for those who might have missed it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, there's definitely this societal aspect that comes hand in hand with having a facial difference. I mean, you're kind of alienated and outcasted for the way you look. And I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I think I might have briefly touched on it. Also, the medical aspect of having a facial difference. So you have two very distinct challenges that kind of come along with having a facial difference. Is one, avoiding the teasing, and the other is the surgeries and the medical appointments.
So in terms of speaking out about these issues, you've brought a friend along today. So, Vanessa.
Yeah. Vanessa, hi.
So, Vanessa, can you tell me a little bit about your story?
All right, sure. So, I was diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic arthritis when I was 9 years old. And so, basically, it affects my entire life.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
I don't think so. Sorry, just one second.
It's not live.
I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old, but unfortunately we figured out I basically had it since I was 5. And so because of the type of arthritis it was, it basically eroded away a lot of my bones. So my TMJ joints were eroded away when I was quite young. And so my lower jaw, actually my entire jaw stopped growing around like when I was 5. So my jaw basically stayed the same size like as my 5-year-old self. And it's basically, so it changed the structure of my face, and I required quite a few surgeries to fix that, and especially with my arthritis and everything, because it affected my entire body. I've had multiple surgeries for joint injections, and I've been on medication, and basically I've been going to SickKids since I was, 9 years old, so, yeah.
So, to each of you, as a child growing up with a facial difference, what were some of the biggest challenges that you noticed?
I think it's the bullying. Yeah, I think 100% it is the bullying. And just the fact when you're a little kid, you just kind of want to hang out and have fun. And, you want to be friends with everybody because that's just how you are when
you're
little.
Excitable young kid.
Yeah, exactly. And then all you want to do is play. And then you have people telling you, oh, you're ugly, or you can't play with us.
Why are you so different, or what's wrong with your face, and, you should be over there with, the weird kids. And,
and, all you want to do is, swing on the sunset with other people, but you
friends,
can't. And you don't really understand why, because in your perception of yourself, you think that you're just like everybody else, like you're just a normal kid, and you are. You just happen to look different. And I think a lot of that comes with the frustration of other people and other kids not realizing that you're the same. You're still fun. You still want to play games. You still want to play sports. But then the
you're the same smarts. We're still both like where our intelligence is the same, you know, and that's what I think frustrated me a lot growing up, is everyone thought I was stupid or dumb, was, you know, had like some mental problem because of the way I looked, when like in fact we're both going to university and, you know, we're both really smart people.
So when you were growing up, what were some of the greatest support systems?
I think the greatest support system, well, I said this last time, was about faith. And, you know, I was so beneficial that I've never not known about faith because my parents got involved when I was 2 years old. So, you know, it's been a life thing for me. So I can only imagine how the next deal is coming into this organization where I was kind of like born into it. And I think, honestly, just being around other people who look different and realize it's okay to be accepted, we're normal, and you make beautiful friendships. Like, Vanessa is, like, my best friend, and I wouldn't know her without about Jeez. And the fact that we both had double jaw surgery, we both had severe sleep apnea, it's kind of funny because we can relate. And my other friends who don't have facial differences can't really relate on that aspect. Doesn't mean that they're any less of a friend, but it's just so nice to have this special bond with somebody who actually gets it.
Yeah.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for inclusion and awareness of facial differences, what would you say?
I think just, yeah, trying to find a support system and just, I guess, be open to being, like, taught and, like, learning, you know, because I think a lot of people go in with a really closed mind. And I know I went to this, I've had this one experience where I went to this conference, and this gentleman came up to me and he basically told me he didn't believe in facial differences and that everyone was born the way they were born and that our organization was stupid, and he didn't agree. And it really frustrated me because, you know, it's like, well, there's so many kids, you know, born not just different, but, you know, like structurally, like we have medical problems and go through a lot of different experiences. So I think, like, just people being open to being, like, taught and learning about us, I guess.
And to validate our
struggles.
Yeah, that's because I think a lot of people, when they hear, oh, you have bullying, oh, okay, everybody goes through bullying.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree, but it's to the extent, like, we're
it's
bullied on the way we look, and that's something we cannot help, we cannot change.
And we're alienated because of that. Yeah. And, you know,
it's just, you know, it's like, I think it should be, like, why judge somebody on the way you look? Like, like, judge them on their character, don't judge them on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something that's so incredible.
And it's this kind of thing that, you know, we, like, everyone, it's been going on for so long, to, you know, just, like, love someone for their personality and not for their looks. And then I feel like for, you know, us, it's, like, almost double that because, yeah, we may feel different, but again, it's, like, our, like, first thing someone sees is your face, you know, and if you have a facial difference, people are, like, totally off-put by that and just don't even want to, like, acknowledge you.
And like I said before, I believe in the other segment that we did, Cam, I said it's important to not judge a book by a cover, but actually open it up and read its story. And I think that's me and Vanessa
got
a mandate towards everybody and everybody to know. And it doesn't matter if they have a facial difference, any kind of difference.
Yeah.
I think people just need to, you know, kind of take a step out of themselves, put themselves in somebody else's shoes, validate the other person's feelings, and validate the challenges that they've had throughout their life and actually get to know them. And you don't know, you might actually meet,
like,
your new best friend,
or
your new, like, partner.
So, if you could see any one educational tool added for the public on this subject, what would it be? How would you teach people?
Probably about safety,
yeah,
I think, is the biggest thing. Or even, like, you know, just going on Google, which I know it sounds silly, but even typing in, like, you know, facial differences.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, most of the time, about face is, like, the first thing that will come up, or
and
a lot of other organizations.
And I believe that, I know that I had, my one friend was asking questions about my syndrome of Peter Collins syndrome, and even I didn't even know some of the answers. And I said, you know what, just Google it, because there's a lot of research being done in the field. So if somebody actually really wanted to know more, then they can totally just do their own research, and then each have their own ideas too.
Yeah, and it's really not that hard, because if you, especially, like, you know, at the kids' hospital, there's tons of brochures and like pamphlets and flyers of tons of information that's given out, and I think if just people would take the next step, just try to find
the
out
information
and learn.
Is all there.
Yeah, exactly, because it's reaching for it.
And also about GACE, we're very open to allies. Like, we love our community members, so you can get involved if you don't have a facial difference, or if you do. We're really open. We're just open to people in general. We have a lot of people, and so I think that if you do want to learn more, reach out to us.
Yeah, it's reaching
out. We will welcome you with open arms. We always want new friends. So.
Exactly.
Like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Of course. Take a step outside yourself. I love that. That's what people just need to do in terms of recognizing these are not simply conditions walking around. These are people, intelligent, capable, strong people with hopes, dreams, families, jobs, what have you. Both Katie and Vanessa spoke with remarkable strength and courage, for the fact is, sometimes in society today, if something's not immediately in our comfort zone, we don't want to look upon it. We don't want to broaden our understanding. We've gotten to a point where we assume the first quick, convenient answer is the right one. But they said it exactly right. Research. Get to know something about others. Someday, everybody is going to encounter someone with a disability. And the fact of the matter is, people need to know how to be prepared. They need to know that certain things are ignorant to say, or in many cases, that asking about a person's condition respectfully is not something that's going to set them off. It's not something that's going to cause an incident of diplomacy. Most people with disabilities are actually quite willing to speak about it because it's a very simple divide. We can choose to assume that we know everything and speak with the first thought that comes into our mind. Or we can speak intelligently and respectfully about disabilities. We can ask questions. We can get to know things. It's not just for when you encounter someone with a disability. It broadens your understanding of the world in general. To know there is more than just the same vanilla array of people day after day. To know the different backgrounds, different conditions, just add to the fullness, the richness of life. A steady diet of ice cream and desserts is fine, but sooner or later you want to experience the meat and potatoes of life. Sooner or later you want to understand. There are more types of people, and for any given condition, any condition, there are people living with strength and dignity, wearing it to the point at which you might never even know. We hear about a condition, say cerebral palsy. We assume this person is immobile, that they can't achieve or accomplish for themselves. A lot of us do think along those lines. But if we understand what it really means, we know that these are people who can be educated, hold down a job, carry on a conversation, fall in love, have a family, experience all the same joys and riches that life has to offer. Why in the world we choose to look at somebody with a facial difference and shy away? Not only are Katie and Vanessa great speakers, great people too, coming from a place where they struggled with the issues of bullying, but they said, I'm not going to let it defeat me. That's just amazing, folks. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks.